be that as it may. But yeah, no, for sure. So it does definitely, community plays a role, and just be careful. Because I do run, like I mentioned this to somebody the other day, I do run into quite a few projects that have clearly been abandoned. You can see like the last release or the last push was like 2 years ago or something like that. And I understand why. We have a problem with maintainer burnout. And see, they understand. They understand maintainer burnout.
Just a second. I'll be back. Just a second.
Maintainer burnout was a trigger word.
My name is Skulp Nietling, and this is the Mechanical Ink Podcast, a podcast about open source, the open web, sustainability, and those who want to make the web and the world a better place.
Welcome, everybody, to this live stream series we're trying out this week. And today, for this very first one, we're joined by Matteo Colina. You might have heard of him from things such as Fastify and Platformatic. And today we're going to talk all things Node.js security. But before we dig into all that good stuff, I'm going to ask Matteo to introduce himself. Tell us a little bit more about everything you've done, because you've done a heck of a lot of things. And tell us a bit more about Platformatic.
Hi, folks, and thank you, Shake, to have me here. I'm so happy. Usually I tend to participate as much as these shows as possible generically. So if you, because I think there is a lot to be maintainers and needs to be accessible and people need to be able to ask questions and get answers. So anyway, this is me. So what I do, if you're using JavaScript or any software, probably at this point, if you work in tech, you're using my stuff. Even if you're not in tech, you're using my stuff. Okay. Quite a very famous service that you are using every day, you that you are watching, use my software. Or software that I maintain. So to be clear, it goes from all kind of things. So it goes everywhere. And so all my software has something like 22 billion downloads on NPM. It's kind of massive, a little bit. So please sponsor me on GitHub. This is the pot. Okay, you can choose to put some money in the pot if you're using my software, and you are. So, you know, this is it. But more importantly, after 8 years of consultancy, I started a startup called Platformatic. And Platformatic aims to simplify backend development with Node.js and JavaScript and streamline all the development of anything API-based. So you should check us out. We want to be the answer to all your questions in that regard. So very happy to have another good session on that topic. Okay, from configuration to queues to reusing software to logs to metrics to integrating authentication providers, all sorts of things. But, you know, to database to some extent. Okay, anyway, check us out. I'm also part of the team that maintains Node. And possibly one of the reasons why I am here in this call. So, possibly. Okay. That's it. Collateral. Okay. I am part of the Node.js Think and Steering Committee. I'm also the board member, of the OpenJS Foundation. I have, well, a lot of things, actually. I have probably too many hats. So, yay.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Yeah. So I know about you from Fastify, but then I quickly realized that I know you from a lot of other places. I just didn't know you were behind it. And then learned about Platformatic quite recently when you shared a bunch of cool stuff on Twitter. So, yeah.
Nice.
Alrighty, so let's dive into node things. So let's start with with installing node. We're starting right from the beginning there. So when I think a lot of people like these days don't even think about installing node. It's like most systems just comes with it these days, like kind of like Python or whatever. But sometimes you do need to install it. And when I did the Node.js certification, I learned the interesting fact that even though you can download node, like a binary from the Node.js website, it's actually kind of recommended to use a version manager like NVM or NSM on Windows if you're not using Windows subsystem for Linux. And there's a couple of reasons for that. It's that some of the other like OS native things lag behind this, the quick release cycle of node, that kind of stuff. But the bigger thing is oftentimes if you install node that way, and you then want to install a global package, a global node package, then it forces you to use sudo. And that opens a potential problem for security. So, but with that said, it's been a while since I learned that. So I don't know how this has changed. So I thought I would ask you, does that still hold true? If you would give people advice, would you say rather to use NVM or something to install node and like remove?
I recently had a big conversation. This is public and recorded, by the way.
Yeah.
On the TSC meetings, because those are streamed online.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can actually check out how we do all our decision making. It's all public. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you can, if you have time, you can watch it. Okay. I don't know if it's we are good entertainment, but you know, it's more or less how you. A bunch of people take a long time to make decisions, okay, and burn a lot of money in that doing so, okay, in the sense that wasted time in meetings, okay? So, well, it's not wasted because we don't have, how do we make a lot of people that don't have the same idea expressed their opinion minus a lot of discussion? So, anyway, remove that, okay? So, I would still recommend to install node via NVM. Okay, it's the best way, and it should be the only way from my point of view. This was longly debated. People don't agree with me in the TSC, so that's why it's not listed as the primary option. But generically, I've seen it so ugly things happening. Like I don't know, like most people, developers out there, at least I don't know. Between 20-30%, okay, probably, if my sample is good enough, okay, don't know what sudo does, don't know about permission in their machine, and don't essentially have a basic clue on how to operate a laptop safely. So, first of all, you're watching this, you should be learning those things. You should learn that sudo is actually a very important thing, and you should not be wasting it for running npm install. Literally, what you are saying is when you do sudo npm install, you are saying that I am downloading software from the internet and giving it administration power on my machine and telling it can do absolutely everything. Now, including, I don't know, trigger a restart, flash a new firmware, I don't know, you can format your hard disk, everything. What? This doesn't make... Again, I'm already giving you a lot of power in saying that I'm running software that other people have authored from the internet without checking it. Okay, this we can put an argument there, okay? But giving it administration power on my machine too, are you insane? Okay? So, and by the way, NPM... perfectly clarifies how to fix this. Like you need to set up some shell scripting into your bash profile or SSH, blah, 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 SSHRC, whatever. You need to put some config there and everything now works perfectly. Okay. So it's not hard to fix. Okay. But it's so problematic that you should probably like, this is the first thing that you should be doing. The second reason why you need to use NVM versus something else is you want to be able to switch between multiple versions of Node, depending on what you're doing. Okay? So if you install it with the package manager, you're pretty much screwed because if you want to change it, then you can't.
Yeah, Exactly. And I mean,
or if you need to change,
do that all the time, right? Switch versions.
I do it multiple times a day, most of the time. So I'm not, probably my use case is a little bit peculiar given that how many things I maintain. Okay. But
so. Cool. So that still holds true. That's good to know. There's not a lot of things in software these days.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes, pretty much. Yes.
That holds true for a long period of time. So yeah. So prefer NVM over just downloading the installer. Now, as you,
and by the way, this is my opinion, not the opinion
of
the
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure, so. For sure. Yeah, I stand behind that as well. It makes total sense for me. I've been using NVM ever since then. I just find it much easier anyway. In general, like it's really simple to get NVM set up, and yeah, then from there, absolutely. It's so easy to install a new different version, switch to it.
Oh yeah, it's so, so much simpler. Okay.
And as you said, rightly, if you use sudo and you give administrative rights, like there's been a lot of talk about this thing about post-install scripts and all that good stuff, right? You don't know what those things do oftentimes. Like you have services like socket.dev who will tell you, by the way, this thing, this package you rely on suddenly added a post-install script. You might be careful because where does that come from? What happened?
That is a false errand. Let me explain that because you might not be aware that that's a false errand, okay? So the fact that a post instance script is hard is a problem, okay? Is, and blocking post instance scripts will protect you from a malicious actor? No. Because if you're only making it by blocking post instance scripts, you're only making a malicious actor only slightly harder to tamper your stuff. The post-instance scripts are only a false errand because you're downloading these people, the attacker software, okay? You're downloading the attacker software and block post-instance script. You block one way, but you have still downloaded that software. Well, you have downloaded that software because at some point you're going to use it, okay? So if you're going to use it, then... the dog has arrived after the kid. The dog has arrived. It's a non-stop at this point. Okay. So the problem now is that you're running that software. So at that point, they can just do require FS and do something on your system.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, for sure.
Nope. That it's. A post instance script does not change things, okay? Blocking post instance script does not change things. What will change things is a permission system or providing limiting where your process can, what those processes can or can't do. So
yeah, for sure. Kind of like the sandbox system you have in an iframe where you can tell it you can only do these things. And if it asks for a new permission, you have to explicitly grant it this new permission.
Gotcha. Okay. But again, and that's telling, you know, you can only do this and that. Then in that way, a blocking post instance script will be a safe measure, but then.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So, but as you said, like when you run sudo, you're giving these things that comes from the internet administrative access to your computer. But we do rely on the NPM ecosystem heavily. Like every single day, we pull, like you said, 20 billion times, like just your stuff, 20 million times.
That's me. That's me. 20 billion times, 22 billion times last year. That's me. And this keep growing, by the way. The graph is still growth. So
if we don't even want to think about, like, if we count everything. So I think we've touched on some of this now. But before the talk, I mentioned quickly the Polyfill IO thing that happened. So that is not necessarily directly Node NPM related, although those packages most likely live on NPM. So when they get polyfilled and they get pushed into your website, they probably originated out of NPM. But either way, staying a little bit more generalistic here, what are some things we can do over and above the fact that, like you said, now we really need a sandbox permission kind of system to be able to say you can do this, that, and the other and not these things. But with what we have today, what are some proactive things developers can do to stay secure while using NPM? Are there any tools, utilities, anything like that, just best practices?
Use module from known authors, okay, generically. Don't, you know, it's use module from people you trust, okay? And I use the word trust with the strongest meaning. You're trusting them to do the right thing, okay? To manage their password correctly, okay? The good thing is NPM now forced everybody to have 2FA, okay? Or at least your top packages, top. I think everybody now, but at least the top packages are all 2FA. And so you can't hack into one just by leaking a code, okay? They need the 2FA token, okay? And they need the password or the token, okay? So yeah, it's some of those kind of things are hard to get, okay? But there was one recent attack on that topic, okay? So a developer let their domain name, so they registered with NPM with a domain name, with an email, and the domain name in which they registered the email expired. And an attacker took over the domain name and then used the recover password functionality to get back the password. And then from there, they get new tokens and new 2FAs, and they got back control of the account. So just to clarify the level of attack, possible attacks that are possible against this kind of stuff, okay? I have no good answer to this, okay? But you need, essentially, first thing, you need to use module from people you trust, okay? And then use module that are maintained. So use modules that are kept up to date, okay? This is the second part. So if a module sits idle for a long time, you know, especially if the author of that module has disappeared because it's changed job or whatever. Okay, bad sign. So it's there is no protection, to be honest, right now. Okay, in this sense. Okay, it's a community based on trust, and mostly it went okay. It's going okay. So. Which is not bad, okay, to be honest. Oh, and one more thing. Use a log file, okay? Like, really use a log file, okay? If you're developing an application, yeah, please use a log file, okay? If you're developing a module or you're brave, you might not want to use a log file, and I don't usually use log files for my open source work, okay? But I have a very high bar on what I'm taking as a dependency.
Okay.
So I, as most people say, I am almost with most of the people that I use their software on a first name basis with them at this point. So I am pretty sure who they are and what are their motives, and I really trust them to do their job as maintainer.
Yeah. So it comes back to community, like you said. You know, find the people that you trust and use the work that they produce, and be skeptical of other things. Be kind of proactive in what you pull. Don't just pull each and everything. Because, I mean, there's also the thing about some of the modules people pull. You could just have the code in your code base. It doesn't have to be a dependency because it's so little. The amount of code in some modules are very, very, very small. You could just copy paste it almost into your project. Be that as it may. But yeah, no, for sure. So it does definitely, community plays a role, and just be careful. Because I do run, like I mentioned this to somebody the other day, I do run into quite a few projects that have clearly been abandoned. You can see like the last release or the last push was like 2 years ago or something like that. And I understand why. We have a problem with maintainer burnout. And See, they understand. They understand maintainer burnout.
Just a second. I'll be back. Just a second.
Maintainer burnout was a trigger word.
Sorry about this. Keeps getting worse. This session keeps getting worse and worse.
It's funny. I mean, I said maintainer burnout, and the dog flipped out so clearly.
Understand.
So I mean, yeah. Be careful, because part of even because some people say maybe the software is just done. I'm like, sure. From a practical perspective, it might be done, but from a maintainer perspective, it's never done, because it has underlying dependencies that is changing and it needs to be kept up to date. And sometimes the only change there is there was a security thing identified, and therefore there's an update to a dependency of that. So yep. You know, the software might be done, but the maintenance work is never done, never really.
Yeah, it's never done. You can say, "Oh, this is done," and but it's never done like a painting is done. Okay, you need, and to be honest, you know, even painting every now and then it's a little bit of maintenance, or a building. Okay, you can say, "Oh, it's done." Even software that can be, "Oh, this is done," but then it's not done, because you it's like a building most of the time. Even if you don't want to do any addition or adding new features, you can just say, well, but every now and then you need to do maintenance, okay? And if you own a house, you know how much maintenance a house requires every week. So essentially, an open source project is like that, okay? You have a lot of chores to do every single time, okay? And every now and then you just need to update it and release new things, okay? Just consider that one of the pillars of the internet, OpenSSL, okay, as a support window of more or less 3 years in the open form. If not, you need to go buy a paid license for it. Which means that if your software uses OpenSSL, okay, you cannot offer a longer support time than what OpenSSL provides, unless you are keen in, you know, maintaining OpenSSL after that timeline. But that's a different topic. So, this is to all say, you need the ground is shifting all the time. The floor is shifting all the time. Sure.
So, do you think maybe the more like responsible thing would be to make a final release in which you put a deprecation notice or a this is no longer maintained, and then archiving your project?
Okay, so it is the interesting part, okay? NPM deprecate is horrible, because it says to you that you should put a release with deprecate. Now, what the people would do to not see the deprecation message is they will pin the previous one. So completely defeating the point of the deprecation to begin with.
Yes.
So you should deprecate them all and tell people stop using this thing. Okay? They should see... You can NPM deprecate, you can deprecate them all.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, and the deprecation message, yes, you put it on the last, you do a release with a deprecation message, whatever, that's fine. But
yeah, deprecate all.
You can even avoid doing that and just using NPM deprecate. Yeah, they put in the thing that in the document that you can deprecate a range, but you want to deprecate them all, not all, like all the version. Otherwise, and there is a popular module that you should stop be using, okay? So let's get into practical things. There is this module called CSurf. It's an old module from the Express community, which is being deprecated 4 years ago. It was deprecated a few years ago. It still has 400,000 downloads per week.
Wow.
Okay? And you should not be using this. Mm-hmm. And you are.
Yeah, clearly a lot of people are. Yeah, okay. And a lot of end users is exposed to that as well.
Yes.
So, when
in
the process of building Fastify, what were some of the security considerations that you took into account? Maybe some of this is just around choosing which dependencies to use and not to use, but are there any other things that you've thought of and continue?
So the first thing is, yes, the first thing is if you are not, like, making it clear and simple that validating the data is a primary concern, okay? Validating data is a primary concern of your app. So when you receive untrusted input, you should validate and sanitize the data thoroughly before doing any processing with it. Now, 99% probably of the vulnerabilities out there come from data that's not currently validated and sanitized before running it, before doing stuff with it, okay? And it's super bad, okay? Like, the out there, it's super bad, okay? Like, to the point of, should I allow certain kind of characters in my fields or escape them, okay? And then, when I'm rendering them, am I enable some attacks when those are rendered on the front end? Okay, is there somebody escaping thing? Now, you can get quite a long combination of attacks, okay? And then you can get fancy with cookies and cookie tossing and CSRF attacks and so on and so forth. Yes, CSRF is still a problem in 2024, okay? It's still a problem. Limited, but still a problem, okay? Generically, the Fastify stance on this is we want to make it safe for you to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Okay? And the recommended path will be do the right thing. Now, you can't really prevent people to do the wrong thing. Otherwise, you know, we would be in a much better world, probably, or a world that's less fun, okay? If, depending on the point of view, okay? So, but you should validate your inputs, okay? Sorry. And very recently circulated some things where they were shoveling in data inside a database when rendering a React component. Mm-hmm. And I died inside.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, how can you promote such an unsafe way of coding? Okay. I'm not, like, it's unsafe. Okay, yeah. It's not safe. Yeah. Okay, whenever you receive data from an untrusted input, you should validate it. Okay, it's very, doesn't require it. It probably tells you the professor at your first course of software development will tell you you should validate your inputs. So I'm probably not drilling it enough. It has not been drilled it enough into people. They don't do this. Okay, so. So validate your frigging inputs. This is the first part, okay? And this takes a lot of code, a lot of effort, okay? So you want to have something that helps you with that versus something that does not, okay? So this is the first part of my recommendation on fastifying the inputs and things like that. Then there is the attacks called prototype poisoning. Okay, which is not prototype pollution, there's prototype poisoning, okay? Which is a lesser form of prototype pollution to some extent, but it's still a tricky one, okay? So, and most of the framework and libraries tell you you should validate this yourself, okay? Funny enough. Which means that you're using body parser, for example, you are completely vulnerable to this. It's not a vulnerability in the sense, is that most people will not sanitize for it. So so basically, here it goes how it works. I'm sending you you receive a JSON. I'm sending you a JSON payload, and it has either a constructor property or __ proto __ thing. Okay, and normally it's fine that it's parsed a normal JSON string. It's just a normal object with that prototype. It's super easy, okay? But here it goes when you have the problem. you pass that object through object assign or some other form of things that copy all the properties from one object to the other. And when you do that, you're actually overriding the prototype of the other one.
That's nasty.
Oh, it's, and then you can, the surface blast can be from a crash of a silver bullet crash of the project, so denial of service, to all sorts of things, to be honest. It's if somebody can craft that thing to be something useful, okay? No, fun, right? And the body parser module does not handle it. So if you're using Express, you are completely unprotected and you need to handle it on your own. And no one that you're watching this that are using Express are not doing it. So, yeah.
That is a rough one.
There is a long document on it on the Fastify website that was originally written by Aaron Hammer. So it's I'm just adding a link here. So you can read more about the topic.
Yeah, I'd love to read more about it.
Okay. But it's... anyway, yes, validate your inputs.
That is very good advice.
Okay. There is a module called Secure JSON Parse. It is a lot... It's a copy and paste from the... it's a copy and paste from an article in his blog, in his website that is not available anymore. Okay, so I wanted to point out that. And but the module, there's a nice module that protects against this called Secure JSON Parse that does what it says on the tin.
Yeah,
protects against this. That's awesome.
Okay, that's very good. That's a great tip. Talking about tips, I think you've given so many now. I don't know if there's if you can squeeze a couple more out. Any other like tips, just for, I think, you know, Node.js, maybe specific kind of security things, but even just generally on the web, like what are things that people tend to get wrong that can be avoided by best practice, common sense kind of thing?
Learn cars.
Yeah.
Like putting star in cars is wrong.
Yes.
Oh, you're laughing. You're laughing there because you did it.
I've done it.
And the people that are watching have done it. And by doing that, you enable so many bad attacks that, you know, that's learn cars. Okay. It's hard. It's freaking hard, but learn it. Come on. What are you waiting? Learn freaking cars. Mm. Sorry to be.
By all means.
Aggressive here. Learn cars, okay? Some other things. Learn what a CSP policy is, a CSP is, and add one. Use the helmet module that has a huge load of other bunch of headers that you need, okay? Last but not least... keep in mind that certain kind of attacks has huge penalties by law. Mm. So if you are leaking PII or other stuff, then you're liable. So under GDPR or some equivalent legislation. Mm-hmm. So pretty bad, okay? So don't leak PII.
Yes, please.
And be careful on how you do that, okay?
So I know at Mozilla they had this thing called lean data. So the idea is collect as little as possible, because if you don't collect PII, you can't leak PII.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that's the point, okay? So if you have PII, probably you want to put them in a very safe box, very different database, very different subsystem. Put it there. Keep it very much locked down. And limit the blast radius in case, like, as you design your system, if you design it in this way, you can have breach. You can design, I can have a breach here, but then if they need to cross that bridge, I'm protecting it, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are ways to design system like that.
Yeah. I know at BoxyHQ, we're working on a privacy vault that is meant to do exactly that kind of thing, to keep the sensitive data separate and secure. If you really need to collect these things.
It's very hard. It's actually very, it's a very, like, and again, a lot of people are just putting complex business logic in React components. And sorry, it gives me itch all the time. Like, probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is my two cents. Okay.
Yeah. So. No. So, with regards to these things you just mentioned, like learn cores, learn CSP, validate your input, sanitize, make sure that you don't output stuff to the UI that could potentially execute a malicious script, stuff like that. Do you have some places that you look to when you want to know more about this, stay up to date?
OWASP, most of the time, if I need to learn more, I spent a huge amount of time on OWASP to learn all sorts of attacks. It's a phenomenal collection of database data. It's actually super hard. Okay, yeah. Super hard.
Yeah.
Most of the time to understand what is in there. So you might want even to have some expert to ask for. Okay. Also have a clear understanding and have a clear think of what are the security consideration of the tools, the techniques that you use for authenticating your users. Okay. Each one, there's nothing is perfect. Each one has benefits and attack vectors. Okay. So let me explain a typical example. You log in into a site. Okay. If you log in into a site, do you want to keep the user logged in? If you want to keep the user logged in, how do you do that? Well, either you have some cookie, okay, or you have you store a token or something in local storage. The local storage thing is super insecure, okay. What you need is to use a cookie. Wait a second, but you can read the cookie from JavaScript. So what are you saying, Matteo? No, you have HTTP only secure cookies.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And you can limit them by domain too. So now you have all of this and you can lock it down. Now, the other bit is you lock it down and you make sure that only goes to that domain, not the upper. Like if it has a subdomain and stuff, no, only that subdomain, full domain. Because otherwise, cookie can be tossed from one to the other, which, funny enough. So if I have a cookie from a subdomain, I can use some very odd tricks to get it on the main one. Fun. And all of this is nightmare stuff. Okay. So, but make sure you do all of that. And if possible, put the authentication cookie, okay, on a separate domain. Mm. So you go and ask, you do the token, a thing, okay? So you store a cookie that you can then use to get the token that you're going to use to do all your API calls.
Okay, and that exchange happens on the, like they say, on the back channel, never on the front channel. So you do it from the back end, not where you have full control.
Exactly, this one's from the front end. So you go with the front end with your, you do this, you get your first cookie. This is the only thing that is stored, which is a secure cookie that the browser cannot see. Then you, when you do that flow, you get a JWT or some other opaque value, but that's valid only for a short amount of time. And then they need to get to ask again to get a fresh one. So that even if that is leaked, the attack blast of that is way contained.
Yeah. This is not easy stuff.
So,
not easy stuff.
Oh look, no, this is freaking hard stuff. Like I'm not even. It's also the stuff of nightmares because it's as soon as you start getting into this, you realize how much insecurity there is out there. Okay, And as I typically say, it's if you're using Node.js, there are multiple ways I can hack you right now. Mostly because I have access to the a lot of information behind the channel. Yes. So it's and involved in some of those discussions. But some of it is the stuff of nightmares on this front, okay? Because it's you don't want to be on the security on a team receiving that kind of attacks.
No, thank you. So with all of that, like, what? And this doesn't necessarily have to be security related, but if it is, that's cool. That would be bonus points. What is coming down the pipeline in Node that you're excited about?
So, okay, one thing that I cannot tell. Well, it's public, but I don't want to spoil. So somebody else will need to take the to do the honors and introduce that to the world. Okay, but it's probably the most one of the most requested features by developers in Node. Okay, so the one something is coming. Okay, then we have we don't have many big things prepared for 22. Okay, mostly most of the good things have been slowly backported, slowly released. So V20 mostly has a lot of the new things that that you might want to use or you can imagine to use. So it's pretty solid, and 22 does not have these massive, big new things, big announcements in there, okay? But, yeah, we are working on something cool, but I'm not going to do the honors and disclose it. One thing that is coming definitely is WebSocket.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So it's coming, okay? Apart from that is... more or less business as usual on those things, and might happen something very nice. Hopefully, finger crossed. Okay, it's there is a PR open, so it's not too hard to find.
But you have to do some. But
it's a old, you know, hide it in plain sight.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? Most place you look,
It's hide it in plain sight. Mm-hmm. Okay, so which is pretty cool. So
so go check out the PRs on the Node repository, folks. You might find what Matteo's talking about. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Matteo. This is a great conversation with all of the life just walking right in. This is beautiful. No.
Sorry. This was not planned. I love
it. Okay. In closing, then, you kind of mentioned some of this in the beginning, but let's just do it at the end as well. How can people find you and support you?
So you can find me on Twitter at Matteo Collina. You can also find all my links at nodeland.dev. Also, I have a newsletter that you can subscribe to if you want to keep track of my updates. You can check it out. Actually, I should publish a new edition of it. That nice that you are talking about. Okay. So,
awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Matteo. Have a great rest of your evening. And thanks again for chatting.
Bye, Shaq. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Mechanical Ink podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with your friends. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Have something to add? Continue the conversation on GitHub and join the community on Slack. Until the next one, keep all the things open.